all for coming. So,
today what I want.
Oh, okay, good.
Okay, can you hear me? Yeah. So what I'd like to talk about today is an application that we've recently had the chance to apply compressed sensing, and I think it's a very exciting application. Although we've applied this thing to ultrasound, it's over-the-air ultrasonic sensing, I think it has a lot of implications for active sensing and wideband arrays in various areas. So I'll start by setting up the problem. The general idea is that we have an array and that the array configuration is not something that we are looking into right now. But we have a general array and we have a scene. And what we'd like to do is illuminate the scene and image that scene. And we want to do that with ultrasound. And what we would like to get is we would like to get the 3D reflectivity of the scene. Now, this is not very easy. That's why we're trying to use wideband ultrasound. And also what we want to do is we want to use a lot of the ideas from compressed sensing. Now, what makes us think that we can do that is that every object in the scene will reflect the ultrasound, but the ultrasound doesn't penetrate that object. So anything behind that object we cannot see, so it will appear as zero in our representation. If the object reflects the ultrasound, it means that there was nothing in front of it occluding it. So everything in front of the object is zero. So if we discretize the scene, let's say by in three dimensions, N1, N2, N3, the number of points in the discretization, the scene has at most N2 times N1 points. It's generally sparse. Usually it's going to be even sparser. So that makes us be hopeful that compressed sensing will work on that scene. So let's try to see if we can model this whole system and see what we can do with that, and then see if that helps us design the sensing system and how to get some reconstruction from that. So we'll start by looking at a single transmitter and a single receiver. In most of this talk, the transmitters are going to be blue dots and the receivers green little triangles. And then I'm going to be talking about a single scene point, which I'm going to index. I'm going to call scene point N. And the scene points, you can think of them as a whole scene. It's a 3D scene. You can think of it as a whole vector that goes from 0 to the total number of points. And you just vectorize the whole 3D volume. And the transmitter from that particular scene point has a certain distance. Here it's DSN. I don't know if you can see that. I just realized they're a bit small. And the receiver has another distance. So we can look at how long it takes, the path for that particular, using the speed of sound, we can calculate the distance from transmitter to receiver and see what's the phase delay given a certain pulse of a certain frequency. And if we have a wideband pulse, we can always take the Fourier transform of that and look at the propagation delay for that particular point. So if we look at all the points, every point has a particular propagation delay. And if a transmitter transmits a certain pulse, this pulse will go get reflected from that point and get received at the receiver. And therefore, we can, for every point that has certain reflectivity in the scene, we can write the propagation, which we can then put it, you know, convert it to a matrix form for all the points in the scene. So in general, we'll have a R, which is the, for every receiver, it will be, I just realized they're too small. So for every receiver, the frequency spectrum that it will receive, we'll just put them all one on the bottom of the other. And the A matrix captures the pulses that we transmit in the frequency domain and how they get delayed and propagate for every single point in that N times N times N in that big cube. And then the signal that we're interested in is that reflectivity, which, as we said before, is sparse. So the signal will be high if that point is if there is something at that point, and zero otherwise. So overall, we get something very familiar, right? You've seen that before. It's now you can see it. So we have a received data, a sensing matrix, which is determined by the pulses that we put in every transmitter and the pulse shape, and then a scene which we hope is sparse and we think is sparse. Now, having said that, that's the model of the system. What can we do to get to do the acquisition? What can we do to recover the signal? And then how can we work with this? So we know from compressed sensing that in order to do that, that matrix has to have some incoherence property, some diversity, some kind of RIP. You can, there are so many names for this. And what we have to control this matrix is the pulses that we transmit from each transmitter. So each transmitter, we design the pulse that we're going to put and transmit that. And there are certain recovery limits. You know, there are the limits that we have shown from compressed sensing, the typical K log N over K and so on. I'm not going to go to that. The point is that we want to make that matrix very diverse and very kind of RIP-like. So, well, what does help? What helps in compressed sensing? Randomization. What we're going to do is we're going to take pulses that are random. And every transmitter, all transmitters will transmit at the same time. And every transmitter will transmit a random pulse, different pulse for each transmitter. What that will do is that pulse will get reflected and get acquired by the receiver. Again, we take it in frequency. And then in the sensing matrix, what this allows us to do is have very low coherence and very very good results, very good separability. Essentially, you can think of it in the classical sense. You know, you can even sometimes in very simple systems you can do match filtering, and because the pulses are so incoherent, you can separate them. Now, there are certain remarks that I'd like to make. Generally, the pulse, the more DFT coefficients you can choose in that pulse, so if you think of the pulse in the time domain, take it in the frequency domain, and you have your DFT transfers, the more DFT coefficients you can choose for that pulse, then the better chances of recovery you have. Also, the more transmitters and receivers, you have a bigger matrix, and you have a better chance of recovery. And what does it mean to have more DFT frequencies? That means that if a pulse has finite length, and you know there are certain approximations in there, it really means the DFT is the length, approximately the length of the pulse. More frequencies available means essentially a longer pulse. So we need to use either wider bandwidth or longer pulses. Now, once we have that and we have the matrix, well, you know, it's a compressed sensing system. We all know we can use L0 minimization, which we really can't. We can relax it to an L1 minimization, or we can use one of those greedy algorithms, COSAM, subspace pursuit, OMP, ROM, STOMP, all the MPs that exist in the field, and we can recover the signal. Now, I said before that pulse length and bandwidth determines the number of degrees of freedom. So in general, you would think that the longer the pulse, the better. And this is true because you send the pulse, it gets transmitted, gets reflected, and you record it, but not always. So here's the case where we have a very long pulse, but the transmitter is the same as the receiver. So what happens? We have a finite distance. By the time the pulse reaches the system and comes back, we're still sending pulses, and our receiver, which is the same as the transmitter, cannot switch modes and receive the pulse. So this is not good. So we need to take into account the fact that there is a distance that we're sensing, and the pulses cannot be longer than the round trip of that distance. So this is something to think about, but we can, and that limits the number of degrees of freedom and the diversity we can introduce in the matrix. But of course, there is a way out of it, which is do intermittent pulsing. So we send a small pulse, randomized. It comes. We wait, we receive it, it comes back. Then we send another pulse, also randomized, different pulse. So that can help us in that particular situation. So this is the system. Another question is that sometimes we have access to a very small physical array. So our array might have very few elements. It might not be, sometimes they might be linear. We are not going, for example, if the array is linear, we're not going to be able, we have a fundamental ambiguity, like up and down ambiguity, and we're not going to be able to reconstruct that sensed, that scene that we want to sense in that direction. Even if it's not linear, maybe the sensors are very close to each other and there are not enough, there's not enough separation to reconstruct things, and we don't have enough sensors to be able to have to achieve diversity. So what can we do to achieve 3D reconstruction? Well, this is a technique that has been used a lot, for example, synthetic aperture radar and so on. We create a virtual array. So we move the array. At every point, we pulse, we receive data, we keep moving it. And we create a virtual or a synthetic array, if you want, which is what we can do here. Of course, in this particular case, if the sensors are linear, there is always an up and down ambiguity, which I'll get to that in a minute. But for example, if we move the array vertically, then there is no such thing if the sensors are on one side. What does that mean? That means we have R1A1 for position 1 of the array, R2A2 for position 2 of the array, and so on. We can get a big matrix, get the scene, and recover it using standard algorithms. Now, I'll get to the simulations. We actually simulated that system in our lab. The system that we chose to simulate is this particular sensor. It's a relatively wideband sensor. The sender frequency is 40 kilohertz. You want to be on a relatively high frequency for humans and dogs not to hear in general if you're doing that. The bandwidth is approximately 10 to 15 kilohertz. So it is a relatively wideband array, wideband sensor. This is the frequency response. And the reconstruction algorithm we chose to use is CoSAMP. And the reason we chose to do that is that if we have prior information on the scene, then we can use something like model-based compressed sensing or something like that and modify that reconstruction algorithm to be able to help in the reconstruction from that scene. Now, these are simulations results from a physical array. We had 5 transmitters and 3 receivers. This is the scene we created. And this is distances in meters. And this is, of course, least squares reconstruction without even adding any noise. As you can see, least squares cannot resolve the scene. There's not enough rank in the matrix to even produce anything. If we use compressed sensing, in particular, as I said, we used CoSAMP, with 3 dBs, with 30 dBsNR. By the way, the colors here represent the reflectivity, the intensity of the reflectivity of that particular scene. We can get a pretty decent reconstruction, a pretty good reconstruction of the scene. Even with 20 dB, we get some artifacts, but we can still get some good reconstruction up to almost a meter away from the array. Here's another example, a virtual array. This is the original scene. I'm not showing least squares reconstruction. It's kind of pointless. You could do it. You'll just get noise. Here's the original scene. And the array is in 2 positions. Now, you might notice that these are not exactly linear. They're slightly offset. The middle elements of the array are slightly lower than the outermost elements. And the reason is that we want to resolve this fundamental up and down ambiguity. So you want the array to be not completely flat to resolve that. This is the scene, and this is what we can recover, even with 10 dB signal-to-noise ratio, which is, and these are meters, which is pretty, pretty bad. So in conclusion, I'd like to make some remarks. So we did do... I think we're the first that I've seen that we have ultrasonic 3D reconstruction using a single array. And what we exploit is the near-field properties and also and compressive sensing, of course, but we also really exploit the fact that the array is wideband. Now, I have to make a point in that, a note here, that typically if you look for ultrasonic sensors, they're really tuned to be narrowband. Typical ultrasonic applications, what people look for them is very narrow field of view and very narrow band, and the two are compatible. But in general, this is what people want, which is completely opposite to what we want. What is nice is that actually if you want to make the array wideband, you also widen the field of view. So this is if you want to make the sensor wideband. You widen the field of view, which is really good for us. So there exist a few sensors like the one I showed that can have wideband sensing. Now, there are certain resolutions versus scene depth trade-offs. Generally, the higher the frequency you can take the ultrasound, the better the resolution you can get. That has to do with the wavelet, with the wavelength of the ultrasound. Unfortunately, when you're talking about over-the-air sensing, high frequency means that you can sense in like 2 centimeters in front of you and not more. If you go like to 500 kilohertz or something. So that 40 kilohertz is a pretty good, that we use, is a pretty good frequency if you want to do something in the order of a few meters up to, I don't know, 5-6 meters. There are some trade-offs in complexity versus performance. So what that means, the number of transducers we get we can get better performance. We have a denser array, we have a bigger matrix, more randomness that we can introduce there. Of course, that means bigger cost for the array and more hardware complexity. What is interesting is that if we increase the receivers only, the number of receivers is the only thing that matters in terms of the computational cost. The number of transmitters really doesn't affect complexity that much, except for creating that initial matrix. Once you create that matrix, the number of transmitters doesn't matter in the complexity. The length of the system only has to do with the receivers, which is good because in general, up to a point, we can increase transmitters and increase diversity without hurting our computational complexity. Now, this is preliminary to intermediate kind of work. We are building a real system, and we're actually conducting experiments that, as we speak, that have initial very good results. There is some theoretical analysis that we need to do, and the difficulty in this analysis is that we're not talking about narrow frequencies. We're actually talking about wideband arrays, and there are some tricky properties that we need to exploit there. So with that, I'm open to questions or comments.
How sensitive is your system to motion artifacts? I mean, you say that you move your array, and I assume it's being done by a robot or person or something. But how accurately do you know the position of your moved array?
So this is something that we need to examine. I expect we will be a bit sensitive. We would like to know the motion pretty well. And it's something that actually it's one of our interest is not really on static arrays, it's on mobile arrays. So this is kind of one of the next things that we really need to study, how sensitive we are. One thing that is important even with static arrays is how sensitive we are to discretization of the space, so coarse versus fine, which is also another question that fine discretization increases complexity by a lot. And it seems that we're pretty robust, and there are ways even if we go to big extremes, there are ways that we can essentially do a coarse discretization and then zoom in to the points of interest and do a fine discretization there.
Thanks for the talk. I was wondering if you've thought about ways of taking advantage of the inherent structure in the sparsity, in this case, for a reconstruction algorithm.
Right. This is one reason we use COSAMP. There we can do a very good model-based compressed sensing in which we can look at nearby pixels. We can look at the fact that, for example, this is standard sparsity, but you know that if you have an object, there's nothing behind it, so you can set everything behind it to zero. You know, things like that you can do. We haven't looked at that in this work, but it's definitely in our interest.
Yeah, how is it different from a sister problem that we have been looking at and everybody, which is actually compressive sensing in ground penetrating radar and compressive sensing in through the wall imaging? And those applications, you actually are dealing with much more difficult issues where an extended target violates the linear model presumption because of the internal interactions among the reflecting points. And then the target is frequency dependent as well.
I haven't seen that work. I'd be happy to see. I don't know how it is different.
Yeah, we deal with wideband arrays. We deal with step frequencies. We thin the frequencies and we thin the array positions. Exactly the same problem.
Okay. Well, I'll be happy to look at that work. We hadn't seen too much work in wideband arrays before.
Okay. Thank you very much.